You're listening to In Focus on 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Damschroeder. My guest today is Matt Mayer, president of Opportunity Ohio, a conservative, market-based solution-oriented think tank based in suburban Columbus. Matt is a frequent columnist and commentator on Ohio and national media with expertise in economics, politics, and national security. In fact, Matt Mayer was a senior official in the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. So, Matt, before we get deeply into Ohio's economic issues, let's discuss national security. There are voices on both the right and the left saying that President Trump's decision to withdraw U.S. military protection from Kurdish fighters in northern Syria, allowing the Turkish army to attack the Kurds, will bring a resurgence of ISIS, as it has been the Kurds who drove ISIS out of that territory. In fact, former Vice President Biden used the debate stage in Westerville to assert that ISIS will become a threat to the U.S. homeland because of the Trump decision. Quote, they're going to come here, unquote, according to Biden. Do you share that assessment of the ISIS threat?
You know, I don't. The reality is we were in a pickle in northern Syria because Turkey is our ally of NATO. The Kurds have been an ally on and off for many battles. But the reality is they are affiliated with terrorist elements that are bothering Turkey. Turkey wanted to create some buffer on their southern border, and we were in the way. So I think Trump made the right decision by getting our forces out of the way of that mess. There is not a national security interest for us. ISIS will not reemerge because there are other forces in the area that have great interest, including the Sunnis, of taking out any type of ISIS-Shia threat. So I'm not concerned that that's going to see the reemergence of ISIS as it happened in Iraq when Barack Obama and Joe Biden did their move and withdrew troops, and that then led to the ISIS renewal that we had to take care of here in Trump's first year and a half. But no, I'm not concerned with the reinvigorated ISIS coming to America.
So let's go back in time. The Soviet Union has collapsed. China is still a third world country, and the United States is a global colossus. How did we blow that advantage, Matt?
Well, we blew it because we assumed that China wouldn't rise and the Soviet Union / Russia wouldn't come back and that Iran wouldn't continue to sponsor terrorism across the Middle East and elsewhere. And so we didn't do what we needed to do to rebalance for the post-Cold War era. We kept a kind of Westphalian pre-Cold War mentality from a foreign policy standpoint. Despite the evidence that was stacking up against that idea.
Ohio's role in U.S. affairs can hardly be understated. For the entire lifespan of everyone listening to this broadcast, Ohio's been the bellwether state that exemplifies the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats facing America. No state has been more important in deciding presidential election outcomes. But this year, the political pros are saying Ohio's status has slipped to inconsequential. Do you think they're correct, Matt? If so, what's behind such a historic change of status for Ohio?
I would never say Ohio is inconsequential. It has 18 electoral votes, and those votes matter a great deal to either candidate or either party. In this case for 2020, I'm fairly confident those are going to go back to Donald Trump, as they did in 2016. And the reason for that is because Ohio has changed over the last 20 years when it was a perennial battleground state. When the recession hit in 2007 and 2008, what you saw really is a large exodus of Democrat voters, particularly African-American voters and others, outside of the kind of northeast quadrant that it was the strength of the Democrats as well as the Toledo area. And now, you know, what you have is it's a far redder state than it was because those voters have simply left Ohio. And so Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, Summit, Akron, Canton, Toledo, Lucas County, those places don't hold the same voting power as they did 20 years ago. And as a result, that's why I think you've seen an increased vote support for Republicans at the state and federal level across Ohio.
What about the shift from Republican strongholds like Columbus used to be, Franklin County, Hamilton County? They've both gone totally Democrat.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You've seen Franklin County was blue, became bluer, and Hamilton County was blue and became bluer. But those have been outweighed, frankly, by the loss of the blue-collar union Democrat voter going from northeast Ohio all the way down into Appalachia over towards Hamilton County. Those voters have essentially switched and become Trump Republicans, and they outweigh whatever growth you've seen in the kind of Franklin County and the collar counties around Franklin County that are blue, as well as Hamilton County with the three counties that are surrounding Hamilton. So those blue areas just can't compete now with the Trump voters that have left the Democratic Party in those areas, again, going from Lake County northeast all the way down through Adams County in the Appalachian Quadrant.
Your frequent publisher, U.S. News and World Report, is just out with a ranking of the states on a wide variety of categories that combine to create a quality of life. Ohio is ranked 39th on the combined scores. The highest category ranking is 7th in opportunity, driven by a number 2 rating on affordability. How would Opportunity Ohio take advantage of our single biggest advantage, a low cost of living?
I think what we have tried to advocate for is, you know, Ohio's private sector job growth has always been fairly anemic and behind the national average. And it's gotten worse over the course of time because policymakers in Columbus have really failed to do what they needed to do on a couple of key issues. Number one, you know, we have far too many layers of government in Ohio. We have 3,700 plus jurisdictions, the third most in America. Each one of those jurisdictions comes with taxing power. And so as a result, the local tax burden on Ohioans, be it property income or elsewhere, is actually quite high compared to other places in the country. So we lose in that category. So we need to do more, I would argue, government consolidation at the local level in order for us to bring down the cost of business for taxpayers across the state. Number two, as Indiana, Michigan, Kentucky, and West Virginia have all passed right to work in the last decade, Ohio remains kind of the left flank of the union blue wall that runs from Ohio up to Maine. That's going to be outpaced, and we can't attract the good, solid-paying jobs here in Ohio because they don't want to be unionized if they come here, so that stuff goes south and west, and we don't, again, we lose out. And so we have a cost-of-living advantage, but it's only an advantage because, frankly, our population is static or declining, so we don't have kind of price competition in housing like other places do. So, you know, affordability is actually a bad sign if you want to think about growth, because if you want people coming here, that would increase the cost of living, but that would be a good thing because with it would come lots of jobs and higher income, and we're not seeing that and haven't seen it for quite a while.
And when U.S. News and World Report ranks Ohio on fiscal stability, they highlight a huge problem that is the classic example of bad government. The short-term issues are good, while the long-term liabilities are among the worst in the entire nation. Bond ratings are strong, but pension liabilities are 48th in America. Matt, doesn't this tell us that Ohio leaders have been pushing huge problems down the road in an effort to make the present look a little more pleasant for them?
Yeah, absolutely. And John, you've done yeoman's work on revealing these pension problems, right? And we've done work over the decade as well. Talk about that. I mean, this is the huge problem. When you've got a bunch of policymakers down in Columbus who are part of the pension system and start putting their entire lives around staying within the system so that they can get a big pension, you're not going to see the kind of reforms we need. And so, you know, look, it's reality. You cannot have a system where people put in very little money and then can retire after 30, 32 years at their highest 5 average salary, which, as you know, they spike it at the end, and then live for another 25, 30 years. That's fiscally unsustainable. And that's the system we've set up here in Ohio, as well as things like drop programs that make it even more expensive for us to have fire and police folks here. So there are lots of elements that need to be reformed, but unfortunately the folks that need to reform it are part of the system, and therefore they don't want to see reform because they're going to cut the reforms that they want to see when they get to their retirement down the road.
When I look at the comprehensive annual financial reports of the pensions and the state as a whole, I see huge investments in assets that have no public market valuations and are therefore valued at whatever the state says. We've recently seen assets in the alternative investment world get crushed when they tried to take the company from private to public to get initial investors like Ohio their money back with profit. In other words, I think the problem in Ohio's pensions is much, much bigger than stated, because a third of the assets are valued at prices that can't be tested by the market. Is this a concern that you share at Opportunity Ohio?
Yeah, absolutely, John. I mean, look, this is what, so the pensions have all driven their assumptions on, you know, an 8.5 or 7 or 8% growth every year of their assets. And they're not getting those, right? So what have they done? Over the course of the last 15 years, they've gotten increasingly into hedge funds and high-risk investments in order to chase the higher returns. Well, guess what? Those returns didn't come, but yet they've spent millions, tens and tens and tens and hundreds of millions on fees for private sector, high-paid investor advisors, and that's not panned out for the pension fund. And so they've actually created a greater problem than just the good old-fashioned funding the problem. They've chased higher returns that didn't come in risky investments that has made it even worse and paid hundreds of millions of dollars to financial advisors when they shouldn't have been doing that in the first place.
Yeah, just by way of example, I've punched the numbers on the largest Ohio pension fund, the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System. And since 2001, fees to outside managers have gone up by 5,660%. If the asset growth matched that, OPRS would have more than $3.2 trillion. There would be a pension problem in Ohio. Let's just put it to you this way. Would there be a pension problem in Ohio if there wasn't an expense problem with this investment management?
There would be, but it would be so severe, right? Because we still have the problem of the people paying into the system are paying in less over time than what they're taking out. I mean, this is a basic math issue, John, right? If I start my 30-year career in the state and I'm starting out at, you know, $35,000, right? So I pay in on a $35,000 salary. Over the course of 30 years, right, I'm going to get to my $100,000, $110,000 salary. That at the very end, that's what I pay in. But our system says, but you can collect on your highest five-year average salary, which are those 110, 108, 106, 104, 102, right, the average of that. So, but for most of my career, I paid in on 35, 40, 45, 50, and you go through the numbers, but I'm paying. So we're paying in more over the course of time at a lower end, but we're taking it to the very high end, and then we're keeping it for essentially, you know, getting people to retire at age 55, 60, live for another 20, 25
though,
years.
Matt, it's compounding longer. It's compounding longer. I mean, theoretically, if they made their investment assumptions, would that matter?
Well, but again, that's where the returns are higher than they can be, right? They're assuming 8.5% when the reality is 3, 4, 5%, right? And on top of that, they're then promising, you know, automatic 5% COLA increases and health care and all this other stuff that just becomes a too big a burden to try to chase the growth in the investment markets. And that's why, again, people like me have always said we need to shift to defined contribution, not defined benefit, because that's the reality we live in now. And again, given how long we're now living, there's no reason we can't be funding this the right way, the responsible way for taxpayers, because ultimately taxpayers are on the hook when these pension funds go belly up.
Amen to that. So the big public policy debate in Ohio right now is whether electric consumers should pay a surcharge to keep Davis, Bessie, and Perry nuclear power plants operational. What's Opportunity Ohio's position on this issue, Matt?
Yeah, you know, we're not big into corporate cronyism, and we see this as a corporate crony problem that we feel wasn't properly debated by the House and Senate in the governor's office. We think there could have been a better way to deal with this, you know, because the problem we deal with is that those power plants that you mentioned are base load power plants, right? And so, you know, we need to have the base load there, but yet we've got this massive abundance of natural gas that we need to be converting into more natural gas generation than, you know, some of the stuff that is getting coal and nuke. And again, I love nuke, but as you know, John, nuke is never going to happen anymore because of NIMBY and the cost to build new nuke, even though it's probably the cleanest thing we have to in terms of clean energy and dependable energy, but it's gone. So we're not big fans of House Bill 6 and the corporate cronyism that came on there. We think that that should be, you know, they should take another look at that and maybe reconsider what they've done.
How do you think that's going to affect economic development, given that, energy costs are so important to manufacturing in Ohio?
Yeah, so that's been one of my, I wrote an op-ed about this in the Columbus Dispatch a few weeks back, saying that, you know, if Governor DeWine wants to become a true governor that's forward-thinking, he would frankly spend all of his time outside of Ohio and across the country and internationally trying to pitch that Ohio has this amazing thing between the convergence of of inexpensive natural gas underneath our feet for manufacturers and other companies that use high energy costs, as well as being located within 500 miles of the, you know, half of the greatest market in the world. But to me, Ohio should be in a place where if it's marketed properly, because we have such so much natural gas underneath our feet, that we could drive, you know, inexpensive manufacturing a cost, married with the fact that getting products to market are going to be better here because we're logistically closer to the huge market that is America. So that, to me, is a huge benefit that just does not get pitched well enough by our political leaders.
You worried about the costs of the natural gas that essentially you're talking about fracking, and fracking is not making money back for the people that put the capital up, and there's concern that we're not going to be able to tap that resource anymore because it literally is being produced at a loss.
Yeah, that's because, thankfully, we have now a massive abundance of natural gas in the U.S., all across, whether it's Ohio, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, down in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, elsewhere. And so that's a market issue that we've got to deal with, right? And we were very aggressive in the shale plays across the country, and as a result, that's where the folks that invested aren't getting their money back. But the gas is there, so the more we can use that gas, that'll help us kind of deal with the supply-demand issue that you're talking about in terms of the investment side of it. So my view is, let's get Ohio moving again. You know, we've only netted like 2,600 private sector jobs in all of 2019, John. That is horrifically bad for the seventh largest state in America.
So you're basically saying we need to drive demand for the gas up by bringing industrial users in, and that will make the exploration, going and extracting the gas, economically viable.
Well, more viable, right? We also need to, you know, the country then needs to, right, invest in LNG and exporting more of our natural gas to Europe and other places. I mean, like, look, we've got this problem in Europe where our NATO ally, right, the whole point of NATO, as you know, was to confront the Soviet Union / Russia. We now have one of our primary allies of NATO, Germany, who's just about wrapping up the building of a pipeline from Russia directly to Germany to get away from the Ukraine, cut out the poles so that Germans can get all that gas coming out of Russia, which means we're going to be having one of our NATO allies who doesn't fund their membership in NATO as they said they would, to the 2% they committed to, they're going to be putting petrodollars back into Vladimir Putin's pocket that is going to be used to undermine NATO and America across the country, right? We need to make sure that Europeans realize what they're doing and take their gas from us rather than from the petro state that is Russia.
Opportunity Ohio has been highly critical of state spending growth that far exceeds Ohio's overall economic growth. And just as bad out here in the hinterland, more of the money than ever stays in Columbus rather than filtering out to the rest of the state. Big centralized government is not what conservatives were expecting from Republican domination. What happened, Matt?
Oh, gosh. What didn't happen, John? I mean, right, this is the problem when you've got folks who are heavily funded by the public sector unions, and their householder gets more money from those guys than most people, right? This is what happens when you've got people that are playing musical chairs among political leadership. All they care about is increasing spending to match the revenues without ever thinking about the rainy days that come, the bad times that come, because they do come. And when that happens, we're going to have another $5 to $8 billion deficit, whether it's a year, two, or three from now when the next recession hits. Ohio will have deficits because our spending has outstripped inflation and population growth consistently over the last 25 years under largely Republican leadership, because there is no appetite in Columbus to restrain spending when the folks funding those people's elections love higher spending.
It seems from afar that the establishment in Columbus, which largely contributes to both parties, Democrat in the city and county level in Columbus, Republican at the state level, are more concerned with the relative position of Columbus than the relative position of Ohio. Is that a fair observation?
You know, I think it's fair to say that the folks in Columbus put way more emphasis on feathering the nest that is the Columbus-Cincinnati world, and they worry less about God's country. They worry less about places like Toledo, Dayton, Cleveland, Akron, Canton. And that's a problem, right? I mean, when you have so much money flowing into Columbus and so little going out and such little job growth happening outside of the greater Columbus and greater Cincinnati area. And, John, that is really the case. If you look at a map of a county-by-county map of private sector job growth over the last decade, there is virtually zero to negative growth in many of the counties compared to Columbus and Hamilton. And the same thing goes with population growth. Population is booming in Franklin County and the collar counties around it, and Hamilton County and the three counties around it. But in the rest of Ohio, we are losing people or stagnating, and that is terrible. It's like the rest of the state is dying as Columbus and Cincinnati do well.
Exactly. And as a recent resident of both of those communities, it seems like the Republicans are involved in a short-term strategy rather than a long-term strategy, in that, as we discussed earlier, both communities have gone from Republican strongholds to Democratic lockdown status, and it's growing in the in strength for Democratic vote. So even if the Republicans maintain control of state government, control of the economic drivers of the entire state are in the hands of the other party.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And so it's not going to be surprising to people like me that, 10 years from now, Ohio will change flavors yet again in terms of who runs it. Because, at the end of the day, you've got to realize that people who can have a chance to leave Ohio do. And we're going to lose our best and brightest, as we have for the last 20 years, to the state south and west of us.
Let's end with a look at the opportunities to fix Ohio. Matt Mayer has just been elected governor. What do you do to restore Ohio to the place of prominence it once held?
Yeah, so my first kind of five things I do as governor is, number one, I'm going to sit everybody down from state and local government into a room and say, we're not leaving here until we figure out how to consolidate government and save taxpayers money, whether that's consolidated school districts, consolidated counties, consolidated townships, villages, cities. But we're going to make this make more sense for the taxpayer, because property and income tax at the local level is going too high. Number two, we're going to tackle pension reform and get that done once and for all, so there is not going to be some pension bailout that Ohio taxpayers are going to have to hit. Number three, I'm going to market the hell out of eastern Ohio and all those places that have natural gas and access to half the U.S. consumer market, to make sure that everybody outside of Ohio knows that you come here, you get a good education, you have a be able to buy a piece of property at a good, affordable price, and you're going to have a job that's going to be there for you and your kids and grandkids. Four, I'm going to get right to work passed in this state, come hell or high water, because we cannot compete with the states surrounding us, let alone the South and West. If Ohio does not shake the yoke of unionism once and for all, we will continue to be a state that is a dead state walking with weak private sector growth, and that's just not going to cut it. And lastly, we are going to then become the voice of federalism in this country. We are going to fight to say it is time that Ohio had control of its transportation dollars, its Medicaid dollars, its energy dollars. We should not have to come to Washington and beg for that money. That money should never leave Ohio. We can take care of and solve our problems here first, foremost. So let us keep the money before sending it to Washington so they can cut out 35 cents of every dollar for waste, fraud, abuse, and bureaucracy back there. Let's keep it here so we can do more to help Ohioans and get it done here.
Thank you, Matt Mayer, president of Dublin, Ohio-based Opportunity Ohio, for joining us today on In Focus. Now, Matt, if listeners want to get involved and help make the ideas you've discussed a reality, what can they do?
Visit us at opportunityohio.org. Follow me on Twitter at OhioMatt. And if you're kind enough, send us a donation. We're a C3 organization that is tax deductible, and that's how we fund our work. And so we'd love any financial support we can get from any of your listeners who agree with what we want to do and see that work further advance down the field.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Matt, for joining me today, and keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks for having me, John.